Hey, Tom, it's Mark. You ready? All right, hang on. Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington. And that special music you hear means that it's Election Tuesday, where we have our special theme music, Kick Out the Republicans. We also have our special guest. We like to invite the Republicans on Election Tuesday to debate the issues of the day, the issues of the week. And my guest today is Tom Robbins. He is the state chair of the Utah branch of the College Republicans. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, Mark.
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer that you can't really believe what you believe unless you hash it out in the marketplace of ideas. And so we're here to do some hash. You ready?
Hey, we're ready.
Okay, well, let's start with the news that I think was most in the news this week, and that is the CIA admitting that, oops, I guess they exaggerated the intelligence. Now, I'm proud to say that I reported this here on the Inside Scoop a year ago, long before it was out in the mainstream, and that's because Democrats were already saying a year ago that the intelligence in the national intelligence estimate, what the CIA put out to members of Congress, that the public report of that was very different from the one in the Senate intelligence estimate. In the intelligence estimate, they said, well, we think it could be, it's likely Saddam has weapons of mass destruction, but the Defense Department believes no on this count, and this Defense Intelligence believes no on this count, and the State Department. In other words, it was a compendium of all the different intelligence, all put together with all the caveats you'd expect in an official report. But when the president sent that report out to the public, he took away all the caveats, he took away all the footnotes, he took all the way that we think or we judge or it seems likely, and he stated it as fact. And that just came out in the Senate Intelligence Report this week. Now, obviously, Tom, I'm not a big fan of this, and I want to see, well, what your thoughts are about it.
Well, as you said, you know, the Senate Intelligence Committee got the full report with all the footnotes, which you claim were deleted. And you know what? With that information, we have Senator John Edwards, a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He looked at that information. He studied it out. He made a decision, and he decided to vote to be able to allow the president to go to war and to start the war in Iraq. So you have the vice presidential nominee on a Democratic, well, presumptive nominee, I guess, on a Democratic ticket, who voted to go into Iraq because he realized, I guess, as many of us do, that the world is safer now that Saddam Hussein put himself in a rat hole and was captured.
Well, that's a good point, Tom, except that I should say that the Senate Intelligence Report that just came out today also shows that even the report they got was exaggerated. That while it's true that the public report was even more exaggerated than the private report, that indeed the Senate report was exaggerated. Everyone was telling everyone what they want to hear, and it turns out that we thought, well, maybe, will it seem likely? Well, Saddam Hussein had the intent to have weapons of mass destruction because he's a bad guy, but there was never any evidence of it to begin with. And I guess at the end of the day, my question is it right to have a preemptive war? Is it right to go and invade a country on the grounds it might have weapons of mass destruction, or should you have evidence before you begin a war with a country that's never attacked you?
Well, I think what you need to realize is, you know, Saddam Hussein had attacked our allies, and beyond that, he had also
15 years ago.
He had also created a situation where he wasn't allowing for the free flow of information. He was playing a cat-and-mouse game. He thought it was a big, huge, fat joke. United Nations, as far as weapons inspectors, he would routinely take pot shots at the different no-fly zone people that were flying to, you know, try to protect and enforce the UN regulations and mandates after the first Gulf War. He was a man who was deceitful. He was deceptive, and in no way, shape, or form should we have trusted him, and the world is a safer place now that he is behind bars and he's going to be tried by his own people.
Well, then I think we should compare. Yes, he did attack our ally, I guess if you can call it that, Kuwait, 15 years ago. North Korea attacked our ally some 40 years ago. And North Korea also has played cat and mouse with inspectors, and they've done worse because they, and we have evidence of this, unlike Saddam Hussein, they are actually developing a nuclear weapon. In fact, they've even said, they've even admitted, hello, we're developing a nuclear weapon. Don't you think we should have gone to war with North Korea before we went to war with Saddam Hussein?
I think we're dealing with, you know, a wide variety of issues on the world stage, you know. America is the stalwart for democracy and the light on the shining hill. And,
okay, but that's all rhetoric, Tom. I mean, shouldn't we have gone after North Korea?
You have a variety of different occasions and different things, and each of them has to be dealt with in a different way. We knew we could take Saddam Hussein out. We knew we could help and take that ruthless dictator out of power so he couldn't maim, destroy, and rape and pillage as he was doing to the Iraqi people, and that has been accomplished. He was found hiding in a hole. Our troops found him, and now he's going to be tried by his own people.
Yeah, but Tom, I mean, listen, all that you're saying, I mean, that sounds really good rhetoric. Okay, we could, in other words, we could take out Saddam, so let's do it. We, you know, Reagan could take out Grenada, so he did it. Kind of reminds me of the drunk who drops his eyeglasses and can't find them, so he goes over to the streetlight, and someone says, hey, did you drop your glasses here? And he said, no, but the light's better here. I mean, yeah, we could take out Saddam, but North Korea is the bigger threat. It is developing nuclear weapons. It can hit California. We're doing nothing about them. And if you're going to take out people who are easy, why don't we take out Sudan, which is practicing genocide right now and is far worse than Iraq?
Well, let's think about this for a second, Mark. You're saying that we went into Saddam Hussein and we should have been looking at other places besides Iraq. Let's look at some of the results of what have happened since we took out Saddam Hussein and since he's no longer in power.
800 Americans dead, 5,000
wounded. One of those which you've been avoiding and haven't been brought up is Libya. Three years ago, they were spending millions to acquire chemical, biological, and nuclear capabilities. Today, thousands of Libya's chemical motors and nuclear processes have been destroyed in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Okay.
Mark, is the world safer?
Sure. Tom?
Now that Libya no longer is developing their nuclear weapons.
Wait.
Is because we went into Iraq that we weren't afraid to use force.
You say that Libya is no longer developing nuclear weapons. Well, I know of a country where in the 90s destroyed massive amounts of chemical and nuclear weapons. We sent inspectors in. They were destroyed by the UN inspectors. They were destroyed by United States missile strikes. They said they had no more. And yet we thought they were still doing nuclear weapons. The name of that country, of course, is Iraq. You can't forget, Tom, we destroyed massive amounts of chemical and biological weapons. Don't you think, Tom, since I've conceded that it's better that Libya has destroyed it, that we were better off when Bill Clinton destroyed Iraq's chemical and biological weapons? Since I've agreed with you, we were better off destroying Libya's. Will you agree with me that Bill Clinton was very good in destroying Iraq's?
Oh, I think that, you know, Bill Clinton's strategy of just kind of, you know, playing a mouse and cat game with Iraq.
Was it not a good idea that Clinton destroyed his chemical and biological weapons?
I think Clinton could have done a lot more to, instead of using rhetoric in the United Nations, using more force to be able to enforce the different mandates which were imposed in Iraq.
But wait, Tom, I mean, as it's well known that Clinton destroyed more of Iraq's chemical and biological weapons than were destroyed during the Persian Gulf War. Indeed, during the last attack, the cruise missile attack in 1998, it's now believed that we took out the last of any important stocks of chemical and biological weapons. You're so proud of George Bush, who, by the way, I should note that Libya's dictator apparently is still trying to kill Saudi Arabia's head, so he's not exactly peaceful, but you know, I've told you, I'm glad that Libya is destroying its chemical and biological weapons. Apparently they offered to do that to Gary Hart years ago, but I'm glad it's gone. Will you also agree that it's a good thing that Clinton destroyed Iraq's stocks?
I think that anything that we can do to destroy or to neutralize a nuclear threat, any inroads that are made, I think it is a good thing.
Okay.
You just
praised Clinton. I want to make that clear, Tom. You just praised Clinton. He did some good things. I'm glad you conceded that point.
Every president does good things.
Fair
but,
enough.
George W. Bush doing a little better job than Clinton. That's the bottom line.
Well, let me open the phones because I want to give our listeners a chance to take you on or take me on. We got some conservative listeners, I know, that like to take me on. The number is 877 877- 57SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And I note that a lot of you are writing on my blog. That's great. My blog can be found on my website at www.radioinsidescoop.com. And it's getting so long and the comments are so many that I haven't had a chance to read them all before the show. That means that you folks are doing a good job. So keep them coming. 877-57-SCOOP or comment@radioinsidescoop.com. I want to just talk about some other issues, and that'll sort of give our callers a chance to pick one or two or three. I got to tell you, we Democrats were very excited by the choice of John Edwards by John Kerry. I think John Edwards provides, for one thing, he provides a really a powerful voice, someone who talks about the two Americas that we live in, where the rich get one America and the poor get another, the middle class get another, and how this is an administration that's looking out for the rich and for corporations and really doesn't give a damn about the average American. Edwards made that speech very well. And I also think he's a charismatic guy who you know, gives an optimistic boost to the campaign. I'm very glad of that choice. Tom, what are your comments on John Edwards?
Yeah, I couldn't be happier. You know, the Americans for Democratic Action is, you know, they're a liberal organization that rates basically how in step United States senators are with their thoughts and their views. It's come out. It's official. Kerry and Edwards' ticket is actually more liberal than the Mondale-Ferraro ticket. We know how well the Mondale and Ferraro message played out to America. So, you know, Kerry has a 92% rating, Edwards 81%. Mondale had a 90% rating, Ferraro 79%. And I think the most interesting thing is what Kerry has said on Edwards, because he spent months attacking him, belittling him. And then he said stuff like, this is not the time for on-the-job training in the White House on national security issues. He said that to the LA Times.
Well, I'm going to agree with you that Kerry would be a better president than John Edwards. But I think as a vice president, this is a guy, you know, it seems to me at the end of the day, it's about two things. It's about character, I guess, first of all. If you look at experience, obviously John Edwards has far more experience than George W. Bush had before he became president. And, you know, look at what happened to him. But I also think it's about character. It's about a person who understands middle America, who understands how the average American feels. This is the son of a mill worker who made it big, who wants to help others climb up the American dream. And if you're looking for foreign policy experience, obviously John Kerry's terrific, but even John Edwards was on the Senate Intelligence Committee for 6 years. He actually was writing articles about counterintelligence back before 9/11 in 2001. He is the prime sponsor of three bills on counterterrorism before 2001, at a time when Vice President Dick Cheney headed the terrorism task force, but never really had a chance to meet. He was too busy with the energy task force. So I don't really see him as having very little experience, but I'm sure you don't agree.
Well, obviously, I mean, you look at Kerry, and, you know, he has more liberal voting record than, you know, Senator Ted Kennedy. So in looking at that, as you can see, I think the American people, once they figure out what the real fabric of Kerry is, and once they figure out the message that he's trying to bring to America, they're going to reject it, just like they did, you know, Hillary Clinton's, socialistic health care plan. And the bottom line is, this is one of my favorite quotes, is that Kerry said of Edwards, he says, when he was campaigning against him, he said, Edwards says he's the only one who can win the South. This is according to the New York Times. Then Kerry goes on to say, he can't even win his own state.
Well,
obviously, you know, Kerry strategically is trying to put Edwards on the ticket to be able to play the Southern strategy. When it plays out, not even John Kerry believes that he's going to win his own state. Well, who cares? Because, you know, Al Gore didn't even win Tennessee, and he didn't win Arkansas. So, you know, the South is turning Republican because they realize.
And he won the country in 2000 anyway, if it weren't for the shenanigans of your party. But I'll tell you, you know, all this talk about they're so liberal, I got to tell you, I don't think people vote. I mean, obviously, okay, you got 40% that are probably going to vote for the Democrats no matter what, and probably 40% going to vote for Republicans no matter what. They're going to look at things like liberal and conservative. I think if you look at the middle 20%, they're looking for competence. They're looking for honesty. And when it comes to competence and honesty, Kerry and Edwards are leagues above George Bush. I don't obviously find it an insult to call them liberal, so it doesn't affect people like me. And I don't think it affects people in the middle. You have to deal with specifics. If you say pro-choice, well, most of America is pro-choice. That may be the liberal position. Pro-life people don't like it. I understand that. I respect their position. But people understand.
I don't know if you can argue that most of America is pro-choice. I don't think that the polls are showing that at all. In fact, the younger generation is actually polling more pro-life than they ever have in many years.
Well, the polls I've seen show that people people are less inclined to get abortions themselves, which is a very different thing. Frankly, I'm not a big fan of the procedure, and I don't know that I would advise anyone who didn't need one because they were, you know, too young to have a baby or were raped or something like that to have one. But I think most Americans do agree that this should be an individual's choice, that it shouldn't be the government that makes that decision. You know, the Republicans keep talking about getting government out of our lives, but when it comes to individual choices, the Republicans seem to want the government controlling people's lives. And that's,
well, when you talk about, you know, government in your lives, I have a question when it deals with abortion that I can just not get a straight answer out of any liberal.
All right, I'll give you a straight answer.
Let's see what you can do. I would assume, as you know, as a person who loves the Democratic Party, who used to work for Representative Frank, you are a strong supporter of the Endangered Species Act and the Wilderness Protection Act?
Generally, yes. I can't say I know all the details of that because I haven't really focused on the environment. But yes, I believe in protecting endangered species, absolutely.
So the Democratic Party, at their core values, will stand up and they'll protect the American bald eagle. They'll protect, you know, weird-looking or endangered trees. It doesn't matter.
That are alive.
They will protect endangered moths.
Right, but you
but
know
when
what?
When it comes to an American unborn baby with a beating heart, they say kill it. We say protect it.
Well, you know,
protecting moss instead of, you know, a baby who's just about to be born with a beating heart. I don't understand it.
I guess the difference is I respect a sequoia more than I do a seedling. You know, I respect a bald eagle more than, you know, I do an eagle embryo. The point is that until a fetus can live outside the mother, you have to, in effect, enslave the mother. You have to force her to use her body against her. And I don't know, I'm sure you know some pregnant women. It's not like you're just sort of, you know, carrying a weight. I mean, it takes over the entire body.
Oh, it's hard.
And
it
should be a
hard
woman's choice. You know, I mean, that's the heart of the issue. I don't want to enslave a woman's body. I will tell you this, though, and I've said this for a long time. The day science can create a baby without a woman, you know, take a sperm and an egg, take it outside, create the whole baby in a test tube and an incubator, then on that day, I will also be opposed to abortion. But it seems to me that as long as you have to have a woman, and I don't think you can enslave her against her will, and this is something that, you know, I think liberals, conservatives disagree on. Let me ask you one
more. I'll tell you what, Mark, just to add on that, is that you're saying that a pregnancy is hard. It is hard because the baby is kicking. Why? Because it is alive. It's hard. And you said the heart of the matter is you don't want to enslave a woman.
Yeah.
I say the heart of the matter is the beating heart of the young baby.
Well, you say beating heart.
Destroyed.
You say beating heart. And
yeah.
When, according to you, does a beating heart occur? You're not going to say it occurs in the first 4 weeks, are you?
It happens, I think it's between the first 8 and 12. I don't know exactly.
Okay. The great majority of abortions, I'm sure you know, occur in the first trimester, occur before a beating heart. Certainly they occur before anyone has any memories. I don't know about you. I know a few people have memories at age 2. I don't think you can remember being inside your mother. If you can, I'd be very impressed, but I probably wouldn't believe you. You know, it's very different when you have, I mean, let's talk about when it's one cell, because you would prevent an abortion. You prevent the morning after pill, I presume. You'd be against even that. In other words, when it's one cell, it hasn't even attached to the uterus, it could be miscarried, then you would protect that embryo, right? You would go into incredible lengths, nets underneath the woman, keep that miscarriage, keep that embryo alive. Is that right?
I would say, as well, if the sperm and the egg have united from that point on, and that the life is starting to grow, then abortion is not allowed. That is my position. It's not allowed. That is my position.
Right. So once the sperm and the egg. Now, why start there, Tom? I mean, before the sperm and the egg have united, that's a potential life. You know, every month a woman loses a potential life. Sure. Nuclear science, a potential great person. Men lose millions. I mean, shouldn't we capture every sperm and every egg and make sure that all those potential lives are created?
Mark, I think once that a decision is made that life is going to unite and there's a sperm and egg together, we need to act to protect that life. I'm only asking that my friend on the Democratic side, when they stand up and are willing to chain themselves to a tree or to protect the bald eagle or protect, an endangered moss or frog or, you know, the desert tortoise out here in Utah, that they would have the same passion or at least half the same amount of passion as protecting the American unborn baby.
Well, let me quote, just added to my blog, the commercial period to think about it. All right, we understand why conservatives are interfering in individuals' lives, you know, putting the government in our life. you know, you're saying it's to save the fetus, to save the embryo. Okay, let's say I accept that. I don't agree with it, but that's at least your reason. Then I want you to tell me why this week, tomorrow, why government is also intervening to make sure that two gay people who love each other and care about each other are not allowed to make a legal commitment to each other. I want you to answer that question when we come back after this break. Hang around, folks. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com.
Was captured, hiding in a hole just like a rat would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Bush and gang came into office claiming to be morally superior to the sexually crass Bill Clinton. They took special glee in highlighting Clinton's reprehensible attempts to parse the legal language of what constitutes sex, pointing to Bill's infamous contortions over what the definition of is. But, holy hypocrite, look who's doing legalistic contortions now, parsing the language of the law not to excuse personal sexual misconduct, but to rationalize the much more crass act of official torture. Internal memos now show that all of Bush's top lawyers were straining at the bit to unleash the military forces to break both U.S. and international laws that ban the use of torture when interrogating prisoners of war. One in particular, a 2002 memo by Jay Bybee, top legal counsel in Bush's Justice Department, went to extremes to claim that in grilling detainees, the Bushites could use practically any torture methods short of killing prisoners without violating either our own nation's torture law or the Geneva Accords. Bybee's memo went into excruciating detail to parse such terms as severe pain, imminent death, and profound mental disruption. The memo concludes that only physical pain as intense as you would expect from organ failure or death qualifies as torture. Short of that, anything goes. The same anything-goes mentality that corrupted Enron and most of corporate America now is loose at the highest levels of government. It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he can apply his anything-goes mentality to all the cases that come before him. This is Jim Hightower saying, we need a president who will choose lawyers of conscience, not of convenience.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
We've got to get out the vote and even the score. When the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't get their heads on the door.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington. Today is Tuesday, and every Tuesday we battle it out with the Republicans. We don't obviously have physical battles, but we have a good verbal battle, and that indeed I strongly believe, and I think that's one thing my guest Tom Robbins, state chair of the Utah College Republicans, will also agree, that battling it out verbally with those that we disagree with, that's what America's all about. I want to get to the phone lines. I am going to ask you that question on the constitutional amendment on gay marriage, but first let's get to the phones. They are lit up, so Tom, you certainly caused some controversy. Let's go to some of the phone lines. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your first name? Where are you from?
My name is Freeman, and I'm from San Diego.
Hi, Freeman from San Diego. You're a first-time caller?
I think I called once probably a few months ago.
Oh, okay. All right. What's your question or comment for either me or Tom?
It's for Tom, and I think his analogy between people hugging trees to protect them and not protecting a life is flawed, just because the people, quote, hugging trees are protecting the whole species, not necessarily one tree or one moth.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Tom, how do you respond to this?
I think it's just basically a core fundamental misstep when a Democratic Party is willing to, quote-unquote, protect a species. I think, you know, call me crazy if you want, Mark. You probably will. I think the most important species is the human species.
Do you think we're going to...
Brothers and sisters, you know, members of the human
family. I agree with you. Are we in danger of dying out, the human species?
Well, I think that if we're not on the brink of extinction, does not give us a blank check to kill 1.3 million of our fellow brothers and sisters who are unborn.
Except that, you know, we're not, believe it or not, Tom, we're not, as Democrats, going out and forcibly, you know, attacking pregnant women. We really don't do that. We say that it's up to the woman to decide. None of us favor abortion, you know, requirements as they do in China. What we're saying is that until the fetus can live outside the mother, that it's the mother's body and we can't enslave it. And I should also add, as you know, that the great majority of abortions occur in the first trimester when there is no beating heart.
Well, you should also know that the vast majority of abortions, over 1.3 million in America, which I think is a sad commentary where we're at as a society, but the majority of people getting abortions have already had one. So they're using it as a form of birth control. So there's not enough education out there. There's people who are abusing the system. And it's a sad commentary, really, in a society.
Let's take your argument to its logical conclusion. I agree with you. There's not enough education out there. And I want to know if you agree with me that we should teach birth control and not abstinence-only education, which, unfortunately, George Bush doesn't want to teach birth control. And I think that when you don't teach birth control, you lead to more unnecessary abortions. Can you and I agree that since birth control is better than an abortion, that we should teach birth control and not abstinence-only?
Well, I think what you need to do is you need to involve the parents, because that's who's going to have the biggest influence on a kid's life. And let me illustrate this, because I actually had a confrontation with this when I was in high school.
Okay, but I do want you to answer my question.
I was a member of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, right?
Okay.
My school, Adelaide E. Stevenson High School, you probably like the name.
I do.
Had an AIDS Education Week.
Okay.
They had all these booths. They did all this stuff, talked about condoms. We approached the administration about having an abstinence-only table, having people pledge that, say, from now on, even if I haven't before, I'm going to be abstinent. You know what we were told? By the administration of that school? No.
Well, now, wait a minute. Abstinence-only education is different from asking people to pledge abstinence, right? It's one thing, and I don't have any problem with asking young people to be abstinent. It's quite another thing to purposely not teach them about birth control in the hope that by not teaching them about birth control, they won't have sex, which is, I believe, the Bush administration's position. That's my question for you, not should we encourage kids to be abstinent. I have no problem with that. My question is, should we specifically not teach them birth control in the hopes that they won't?
I think it's got to be up to the parents and the community. I think it's the community which comes together and provides for the education of their students, for their own children. And I think
you really think, even though it's the children's own body, it's their own kids, it's the woman's own body, she's a 16-year-old girl, okay? It's her parents' choice whether or not she should get pregnant or not? I mean,
no, it's her choice. She's going to decide whether or not she has sex. See, the liberals are always, they play the same old record. They say that you, young person, you're dumb. You're stupid. You don't know what happens when two people get together. You can't figure that out.
They may know that, but they may not know how to properly use birth control. The other thing about birth control, as you well know, is it prevents a lot of diseases, including deadly diseases. And it seems to me, if your choice is protecting a 16-year-old girl's life, protecting her from getting AIDS, and, oh no, she learns about birth control, talking about saving lives, you care about 1.3 million embryos and fetuses. Don't you care about children who are getting AIDS because they don't know how to use birth control?
I care about, not only do I care about, I don't call them unborn or fetuses. I call them what they are, unborn children. And yes, you know, I think what we need to do is we need to allow the communities to be able to decide what they're going to be teaching in their school.
Well, why don't we allow the children?
That's the bottom line, because you have hostile environments, which like at Adelaide Stevenson High School, that you know, hijack the system and don't allow for the other side. I think you need to allow for the school boards, the elected officials, to be accountable to their parents and to use a democratic system to vote them out if they're not teaching what you want them to.
In other words, you believe that government should decide, whereas I believe that individuals should decide. It seems to me...
individuals vote for school board members.
No, but
that's how it works.
Individuals vote for government regulation of Enron, but you don't seem to like that either.
Well, we'll talk about Enron. I hope we do.
Well, we will. But my point is, and I've got to get to other callers because they're hanging on, but my point is that... give the kid the information. Let people know the truth. Let them decide with full information what could be wrong with that. And then, by all means, teach abstinence, but also let them have the information they need to protect their own lives. Okay? Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon from Michigan. What's your question or comment?
Oh, I'd like to talk about the greatest threat to the human species on the planet today, and that's the... Bush administration,
okay,
who have been accused. I'd like to know if Tom would agree with the Senate Intelligence Report, which accuses this president administration of being contaminated with groupthink.
Okay. Do you also agree, Tom, that the administration has groupthink?
I think, you know, as far as politicians are concerned, I think that, you know, you saw on the Democratic side, from Bill Clinton to Al Gore, to John Kerry, to Edwards, who had seen the reports, and, you know, many of them had gone over the first Gulf War to Iraq and had seen things. They were all lining up calling Saddam Hussein a terrorist, saying that he was a threat that needed to be...
But they didn't say we should do a preemptive invasion, all right? There was a difference. Clinton had Iraq contained. And by the way, I should note that I, and maybe Gordon and I disagree on this, I supported actually sending inspectors back in, which Saddam Hussein let in, and containing Iraq. I supported shooting down the planes that were in the no-fly zones, all of that. But that's a big difference from preemptively invading a country when you had no evidence that it was any danger to you.
You think that Saddam Hussein was being compliant? You think that he was, you know, just an open-door policy?
By the time we went to war, yes. That's why he had inspectors in there. And it wasn't just a question of compliance. Do you think North Korea is compliant, Sudan compliant, Libya compliant, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan? I can name 20 nations that are out of compliance with every regulation they should be in. But we don't have a military that's overstretched to conquer all of those nations.
That's why we went after Iraq first, and we'll see where it takes us after we establish democracy there.
Yeah, I think we should go after the most dangerous country first. Gordon, you get the last word.
Well, I think you need to have counter views in developing balanced strategies, especially in wartime, when the soldier's credo is adapt and overcome. If we don't have that, we might as well look at defeat.
Gordon,
I got to say I agree with you. You need counter views. Before we went to Iraq, Saddam Hussein didn't allow for them. Now that is blossoming. Thank you.
Gordon, thank you for your call. I'll tell you what we did. We didn't have counter views was in the United States of America. When you had Eric Shinseki, general, saying we need hundreds of thousands of troops in Iraq, he was demoted. When you had State Department officials say, you know what, Iraq is not a piece of cake. They won't welcome us as liberators. Don't believe Chalabi, who happens to be an Iranian agent, when he says they're going to throw roses in your path. They're not. They're going to treat you as occupiers. Cheney didn't listen. When the Democrats said, well, let's go and let's see if we can get the world to support us first, France says they only want 30 more days. Let's respect the rest of the world. Cheney didn't listen. Bush didn't listen. They wouldn't even allow hearings on the matter. So, you know, I don't think they very much allowed for countervailing views. If they had, we probably wouldn't have the problems we did today. Let me read a couple emails, and I know there are people hanging on the line. Then we got to go to commercial break. I got an email here from Rod in New York. He writes, the buck passing must stop or at least linger at the White House. I don't quite understand how the Republicans feel they score a victory when they say that Kerry and Edwards voted to give George W. the ability to wage war. By that logic, Kerry and Edwards are on the same page in Iraq. If that were true, Iraq would not be an issue. They will freely admit that invading Iraq was made to look like an imminent threat and that under George Bush it has been bungled to desperation. Another great show. Another call, another email on the blog from James Avery, who writes, who would use abortion as birth control? That is a ridiculous idea. Abortions are traumatic, painful, and all women I know would avoid them at all costs. We're going to have Tom's response to these emails and to your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. And I still want an answer on why Republicans are so interested in intervening in our private lives. It's not just a question about abortion. They also want to do their best to make sure that gay people aren't happy. What is their problem? Why won't they leave us alone? Those are my questions for Tom when we come back from break. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP or send an email to comment@scoop.com. at RadioInsideScoop.com.
Despicable is not a word that major corporate executives are used to having hurled at them by high elected officials, but the honchos of Diebold Inc. recently got this very word right in their corporate face. The hurler was Kevin Shelley, California's Secretary of State, and he was referring to his experience with Diebold's electronic voting machines in California's March primary elections. Computer glitches plagued that election, jeopardizing its outcome. For example, thousands of San Diego voters were turned away from the polls because Diebold machines malfunctioned. A subsequent investigation by a state panel of experts on electronic voting found that this company, the second largest purveyor of touchscreen voting machines in the country, had violated state law by installing untested and uncertified software in its machines, then lied about it. "Their performance, their behavior is despicable," Shelley bluntly said. He also put action behind his words, banning the use of more than 14,000 Diebold machines for this November's election, saying that the machines are not secure and reliable. He also recommended that criminal charges be filed for what he called fraudulent actions by Diebold. Shelley had earlier ruled that by 2006, touchscreen voting machines in California must produce a paper receipt so voters can verify the electoral choices they make on these corruptible computers. But after this year's unpleasantness with Diebold, Shelley says he's now exploring ways to speed up this requirement. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, in Maryland, a voters group has filed suit to block the use of all 16,000 of Diebold's virtual voting machines in their state unless a paper verification system is installed on each of them. It's all a part of the growing grassroots rebellion to prevent the electronic theft of our elections. To join the fight, go to www.verifiedvoting.org.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
The stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
$100 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, and that special music means today is Tuesday, and every Tuesday from now until that most important Tuesday in November, November 2nd, we play the special Kick Out the Republicans music in honor of Election Tuesday, where we debate the Republicans. I guess the music's unfair, but hey, that's at least we do give them a word on the show if we don't give them a word in the music. My guest is Tom Robbins. He's the state chair of the Utah College Republicans, and he and I are discussing anything and everything that's come up this week in the news and how it might affect your choice this 2004. And I got to tell you, Tom, I got an email from someone who's right up your alley. It is Jason from Lawrence, South Carolina, and he writes, "As a proud South Carolinian, I'm proud to say that Edwards has nothing in common with most of our values, and while he may have won the primary here, there is no chance of him winning this state or any other southern state. Sincere Republican Jason," and he writes, "No, I do not own a gun or drive a truck." You don't own a gun or drive a truck? Jason, are you sure you're a South Carolina Republican? No, I do appreciate your comment, Jason. I would just say, when you say that Edwards doesn't share your values, what are those values? I want you to call in, Jason. I'm going to encourage you to call in. 877-57-SCOOP. I want to know from you, what values doesn't he share? He supports the values of you know, the poor guy looking to make it in America, the American dream, equal opportunity for everyone. Are those not your values, Jason? Call in and let me know. Tom, you have a comment?
Yeah, I mean, basically what happens is, you know, Senator Edwards supports basically, you know, Senator Hillary Clinton's vision for America. When she talked about raising taxes and the justification for it, she said, according to the AP on June 29th, she said, "We're going to take things away from you on behalf of the common good." It's the same old tired philosophy which does not play well with the American electric. We're taking away your hard-earned money so that we, the smart
Now, hold on. You know, or you should know, if you don't, but I think you do know, that the Kerry Edwards tax plan is that if you make over 200 grand, yes, your taxes will be increased. If you make under 200 grand, your taxes will be reduced, and 98% of Americans make less than 200,000 a year. So we're only talking about one... and 50 Americans, the top 2%, you know, to say take away your, you mean take away you if you're filthy rich, right?
No, I think you're misguided there, because part of the Kerry Edwards plan is going to repeal the current Bush tax cut.
Not completely.
Going to put a tax on those. We'll see.
Actually, you're wrong. No, I just want to be clear. Howard Dean's proposal was to repeal the entire Bush tax cut. That's true. That was never Kerry's proposal. Kerry's proposal was to repeal the tax cuts to the very rich, but that's the only tax cuts he's repealing. Just to be clear on that. I do want to read a couple of emails we've got, and then I got to go and ask you about you know, talking about taking away people's rights, taking away why people are going to be happy. Why is it that Republicans want a constitutional amendment to stop gay marriage? You know what? Let me go right to that. I'll get to those emails in a minute, folks. But if you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. Tom, you know, you say you want government out of our lives. Why is it that government is trying to decide who people can marry?
Well, I think the bottom line is that the difference between you and I is that I feel, and many within my party or many other cultures feel, that at some point you need to draw a line. You need to say, as a society, X, Y, and Z is not acceptable.
Well, and they drew that line.
So we draw that line at gay marriage. You might draw that line at somewhere else.
Well, they used to draw the line at interracial marriage. I mean, after all, the majority of states at one point banned interracial marriage. When the California Supreme Court in 1948 said that was unconstitutional, more than 90% of Americans opposed gay marriage. Opposed interracial marriage. And when the United States Supreme Court struck down the Virginia statute in the case Loving v. Virginia, more than 70% of Americans disapproved of interracial marriage. So they drew the line there, and the Supreme Court said, you know what? You can't draw the line.
Well, Mark, why stop at gay marriage? Why?
Well,
open Pandora's box and let the slippery slope?
Where are you afraid we're
going to
go? I don't see the problem with gay marriage. Maybe you can explain that before we go to a slippery slope.
Well, for example, I've been involved with different defend the marriage rallies and stuff like that, and so I've had a lot of dialogue with different people who disagree with me, and I ask them, where do you draw the line and why? Because, for example, I have an identical twin brother, right?
Okay.
And we're over 18. We're at the age of consent.
Okay.
Okay. Now, let's just say that we decide that we want to be life partners. We love each other.
Uh-huh. And do you have massive amounts of identical twins seeking the right to get married?
Let's not say identical twins. Why draw the line there? Let's open it up to free love. If love is the only definition, let's allow any person of the over the age of consent. Let's not even say it's 18. Let's do a higher threshold, 21. Let's say that if you are, you know, if it's your brother, it's two brothers, two sisters, one brother, one sister,
you know,
cousins, whatever.
You know, Tom, you're raising this parade of horribles, I guess, but I really don't know any large groups of brothers or sisters that want to get married. And I'll tell you, the problem with incest, as I see it, the problem with incest is when people grow up together, and of course, you should know, the great, great majority of incest is not brother-brother, brother-sister. It tends to be father-daughter, fathers raping daughters, because when you grow up together and you have this power threshold, you have this psychological pressure over someone, that's not a good idea. Plus, of course, we all know incest leads to genetic malfunction. But you haven't answered my question about, let me ask you about interracial marriage. How do you feel about that? I mean, at least if you ban interracial marriage, blacks can still marry blacks, whites can marry whites, but if you ban gay marriage, gay people aren't allowed to get married at all. That doesn't seem fair.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's slightly offensive, Mark, that you'd ask me what are my opinions on an interracial.
Well, I'm asking because 70% of Americans opposed it in the 1960s.
Obviously, I support interracial marriage.
Why? Why not keep the races pure? Why should we allow this?
I think there is a huge difference between gay marriage and interracial
Explain
marriage.
Explain the difference to me, please.
I think what it is that at the fundamental, you either believe that this country was founded on under principles endowed by our Creator, and we must respect that Creator.
Okay.
Or we don't.
Well, my creator. Hold on.
My arguments against incest.
No, wait a minute. My creator tells me that gay marriage is okay. Your creator says otherwise. Maybe if we had a Taliban ruling us, then you could impose your religious values on me. But I don't believe in the Taliban. I don't believe in theocracy, and I'm surprised you do.
Well, you know, the funny thing is one of your arguments against incest was you said, well, they'll produce children that maybe have genetic defects. Well,
right.
You know, gays or gay men, perhaps, if two gay men get together, they cannot produce offspring.
Theocracy, and I'm surprised you do.
Well, you know, the funny thing is one of your arguments against incest was you said, well, they'll produce children that maybe have genetic defects. Well,
right.
You know, gays or gay men, perhaps, if two gay men get together, they cannot produce offspring.
And
well,
yet,
let's legalize adults.
Neither can infertile heterosexual couples. Should we prevent their marriage as well?
Let's legalize adult incest and just say that they can't have kids. Right? And then would it be okay for you?
You know, if they're not raised in the same family, hypothetically, and, I mean, you know, you're talking about, what, three people in America? I mean,
no,
that's
come on,
what you're trying to do.
Talk to people who want more than one wife or more than one husband.
Well, no, because that's easy to shut down. What you do is you say that I believe in equality of marriage. I believe that, look, there are all kinds of rights. We know there are thousands of rights that come with marriage. And there are things like Social Security benefits, disability benefits. Obviously, if you've got one spouse, every American should be able to give that spouse a benefit. That makes sense. If you have 12 spouses, you'd be together 50-something years. Do you think, for example, that the legal marriage of Britney Spears to her drunken, I forgot his name, do you think that that's more valuable, more holy, more American? That one should be legal, while Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, who've been together 50 years, shouldn't be? Are you really that cruel to these two elderly women?
Well, I think what you're saying, and basically what you're, you know, posturing here, is you're saying, well, we have a problem with the Brooklyn Bridge Foundation. It's crumbling over here, so let's let it crumble over there.
Well, how does it crumble?
Wait a minute. Heterosexuals who get married and who are making unions, I think there needs to be things in place where they take it more seriously.
Tom, wait. Are you really arguing that straight people will get married less if gay people can be more? Is it really like Groucho Marx Club? Well, if they can be a member, then I don't want to be a member. Groucho Marx said he didn't want to be a member of any club that would have him. I mean, is that it? Oh no, if the gays can get married, I'm going to have to divorce you. I don't really love you that much, my dear, because if gay people can get married, well, then our marriage doesn't mean anything. You're not making that argument, are you, Tom?
No, the argument I'm making is that we're going to have to agree to disagree, that I believe that this country was founded on ideas that we are endowed with certain rights from a creator, and that creator needs to be respected.
Why can't we have equal rights?
I think one of the ways that we do that is having marriage between a man and a woman, not a man and a man, not a woman between a woman.
Why can't we have equal rights?
Because I think what happens is you want to open Pandora's box, and eventually
you're putting
your thumb on a floodgate. Okay,
look,
trying to stop the little leak, and eventually it's going to explode where you cannot say no to anyone.
No, let's go step by step. You said Pandora's box. That's what they said when they allowed interracial marriages. You can't allow blacks to marry whites because soon you'll have Latinos marrying too. You know, that will open Pandora's box. There was a constitutional amendment in the teens to prohibit constitutionally interracial marriage. I'm glad that didn't pass. The answer is, instead of trotting out a parade of horribles, look at the individuals. Look at their lives. Look at these couples. Look at Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon. And you tell me that Britney Spears' marriage and Anna Nicole Smith's marriage to an old guy just so she could get his billions, that somehow that should be given more preference over gay people? Why not just let everyone live and learn and make their own life?
Because the bottom line is you're saying that to do anything or to receive any types of rights, all you have to do is love someone. And I'm telling you.
No, and make a commitment, and there's responsibilities in marriage. In fact, it's interesting, a congressional budget study was done in connection with the constitutional amendment to see how much gay marriages would cost the United States. They found, lo and behold, it would increase. It would increase payments to the United States because, when you marry someone, you're required to take care of them and things like that. It actually would bring in money to the government. There are responsibilities to marriage. It's not like there's just rights. And it seems to me if any two people want to have these rights and responsibilities and they're not harming anybody, leave them alone. Government, stay out of our lives, unless it's Enron, and we'll get to that
talk a little bit about Enron.
Okay, we're going to get to that after the break. I do want to go to a caller real quick. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Hey, it's Jason Vaughn.
Hey, Jason. Okay, you called in. Tell me, how does Edwards not share your values?
First of all, he's anti-abortion. He's anti-marriage. I mean, he's pro-abortion, anti-marriage stability. He's
anti-marriage stability.
Welfare.
No, wait, anti-marriage stability. Is he against the stability of marriage?
Yes, that's what this abortion. That's what this is about. That's what this gay marriage thing. That's what the problem we have with it.
Well, no, wait. How does gay marriage harm a stable marriage? I mean, I don't know whether you're married or your parents are married, but can you name a single straight couple that whose marriage will become unstable if gay people are allowed to get married? I don't even understand the argument, frankly.
It will give our children the view that marriage is evolving, that it doesn't matter because it can change at any moment.
Well, it has. I mean, you got to remember, back in the Bible, you could purchase a woman for so many goats and a sheep, right? I mean, it has changed. Women have equal rights today. It has changed over time. And what's wrong with that?
I'll give you this. I disagree with the marriage amendment because I don't think that the government should be involved in it.
But they got involved in it.
Over 200 years ago, and to protect it for our children, we need this amendment.
Okay.
There's a sanctity there.
Yeah.
It was not given. Marriage is not something that was given by the government. It was given by God, and they shouldn't have ever got involved in the first place.
So we can both agree the government should stay out of it. Let churches decide who to marry. By the way, I would not require any church to marry anybody. I mean, that's up to the individual church or synagogue or mosque or whatever. But it seems to me that...
Or activist judge, which is going to happen.
Well, you know, it seems to me that if two individuals, it's just not our business to tell them who to marry. It's just not my business what two people in South Carolina... you know, it's just not my business.
And 10 years from now, the discussion on this show, you'll be debating, you know, the Utah chairman 10 years from now, and you'll be saying, well, it's just not my business what three or four people do if they want to live together in a commune.
You know what? If three or four people want to live together in a commune, I wouldn't prevent that either. Now, I wouldn't give them more rights. The problem with three or four people is that you'd be giving, like I said, you'd be giving them three or four times the benefits of other married couples. That's not fair. I believe in equality. I don't believe in preference.
But what if they love each other, Mark?
Well, I said they could live together, and if a church or synagogue, let me tell you something. Under Islam, you may know this, you may not know this, a man can have four wives. And it seems to me if a mosque wants to have that marriage, that's up to the individual mosque, and the government shouldn't prohibit the religious ceremony, but they can say that for civil purposes, you can only choose one, because that's only fair.
But they're not going to. In real life, they're going to live with those people, and they're going to be violating
the law. So they live together.
I think we need to follow the Defense of Marriage Act, which our representatives passed by the voice of the people.
Jason, let me just ask you before you go. What's the thing that most offends you about John Edwards? Pick one thing that you think most doesn't share his value. Is it abortion? Is it gay marriage? Or is it something else?
I give John Edwards this. He came from humble beginnings and drug himself up. And that's where his honor and respect has come from. But he does not want to give everybody else the same rights. He wants to give them money, and then the government's done it for him.
Well, now, wait, Jason, who does he not want to give the same rights to? I really want to understand your view. Who is it?
With this redistribution of money from the wealthy, it's nothing more than stealing and taking the rights away from those people you give money to.
Well, now, let me ask you a question, Jason. Do you think that Americans have a responsibility to give back to their country?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I agree, too. I mean, whether it's jury duty, whether it's the Americans fighting and dying, serving in the military, and also paying your taxes, I think, is a requirement. And I got to tell you, some people can give to Americans by being good teachers. Some people can be good Americans by doing volunteer work. Others join the military. And it seems to me that those that have a lot of money can help America by helping those that have never had a chance in life have a chance. It seems to me, let me make my argument, and then you can both respond. If you're trying to decide whether a middle-class kid can go to college or not, or a poor kid can go to college or not, or whether a multi-millionaire can have his seventh yacht, as a society, I would prefer that kid have a chance to go to college. And I don't understand anyone that would – I don't understand – let me do Jason first and then Tom. Why would you oppose taking the seventh yacht from the millionaire so that a kid has a chance to go to college?
Because all of those first things that you just named are voluntary. They volunteer to be a teacher. They volunteer to serve our country.
They don't volunteer for jury duty. They don't. People don't volunteer to pay their taxes. It's true. We have had drafts in the past. I'm sure you wouldn't advocate people dodging the draft, would you?
No, it would not.
Okay, so if you have to serve your country sometimes in a draft,
Mark,
if you have to do jury duty, why shouldn't you have to pay your taxes?
Mark, the bottom line, you want to know the bottom line, Mark?
Yeah, what's the bottom line, Tom?
The bottom line is this. If I have a dollar and I give it to the federal government, I don't give it. They take it in taxes. Like you said, it's mandatory.
That's right.
How much of that dollar is going to go to helping people? If there was a charity that ran their business like the federal government does, they would be put out. They would be disbanded, and they would have their tax exempt status revoked by the IRS.
So the federal
government says that they need your money in order to help, you know, middle class kids go to school. But how much of that dollar actually gets that middle class student? It's disgusting. Red tape.
No way. Look. You got to have bureaucrats to make sure that people don't
it's
commit
not a matter
fraud.
Of bureaucrats. It's disgusting. Not even like 30% of your dollar is going to go.
So you're
going to
cut Pell grants? You're going to cut educational aid for
kids? No. I just think that we should encourage people who have money and who have wealth to have them the opportunity and give them tax incentives or whatever to give more money to charities or donate more of their time or make more contributions that way, because more money is going to get to people which need help, which is really what you want. Taxes are too full of red tape.
Unfortunately.
Let them donate.
If charities really did provide for everybody as they would, we wouldn't have the 1.3 million abortions we're talking about. We wouldn't have the poverty in America. We wouldn't have the kids that go to bed hungry. We wouldn't have the kids that are illiterate in America if charity did all it was supposed to do. You know, I'm sure you know historically, 100 years ago, before the welfare state, people died, literally died. Immigrants came to this country. I don't know if you've read up to Sinclair's The Jungle or not, but they get their arms cut off in the factories. Hey, no regulation. They just lose their arms and no one cared. Charities, unfortunately, don't provide. If they did, you're right. We wouldn't need government, but they just don't. Let me give Jason one last word, and then I'm going to fight with Tom over Enron. Jason, go ahead.
I am one of those poor middle-class guys is going to college.
Then Edwards can help you.
In college.
Then Carrie and Edwards will help you. They'll help you get a Pell Grant.
I don't need their help.
Loans.
I've done it on my own. I've got the Pell Grant. I've done that.
You got a Pell Grant. Why did you get a Pell Grant? That's government help. Why didn't you?
I worked my butt off to get where I am. And I agree that the government should help people go to college.
Good.
I made straight A's through college, through high school, so I could go to college.
That's terrific.
I didn't sit on my butt and wait for the government to do it. And that's what most of these government things go to.
Jason, let me agree with you, all right? I agree with you that you shouldn't sit on your butt and wait for government help. I'm going to agree with you, Jason, that the best government aid is to help people get ahead. It's things like education. It's things like teaching people how to get a good job or helping them with vocational schools. That's what government's all about. I'm going to agree with you, Jason, that I don't support programs where you, quote, just sit on your butt and get paid. Some people do. Some liberals do. But I supported the Clinton reform of welfare, which means that you got to work for the government money. So actually, Jason, I don't know that you and
but
I are too far off.
People aren't doing that. People are not doing
actually,
that.
Actually, they are. You know what? You know how much we give to welfare a year in America? I'll tell you. We give $50 billion. Look at the fact that we spent $200 billion in Iraq. It only costs one quarter of that. And largely this is, by the way, for women with small children, that if they had an abortion, people like Tom would get very upset. So it seems to me that you can't have it both ways. You can't say, don't abort the child, but don't feed the child either.
If women would learn to cross their legs and men would start to think with the right head on their body, they wouldn't have this problem.
I understand, Jason, but you know what? Some people make mistakes, and I don't think they should
over
suffer their whole lives.
Over and over again, we all have
you
to
know
pay
what?
For it because we make money. It's
Jason,
great.
Jason my, I'm going to get with you and Tom in a minute. Jason, my time's running out. I hope you'll call on the show and argue with me again another time. Will you do that?
Like I said, it's the only liberal talk show I've actually heard that I liked.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. I appreciate that.
Appreciate it.
Call again. Tom, we only got a couple minutes left. You know that Ken Lay, the biggest supporter of George Bush, gave more money to George Bush's campaign than any other individual. Bush called him Kenny Boy. Enron has now been indicted for all kinds of fraud and corruption, manipulating energy, California energy prices. You wanted to comment. I think Enron should be regulated. Do you disagree with me?
I think we're going to agree that we need to put pension scammers in jail. Do you agree with me, Mark?
Yes.
All right. Because Enron scammed people out. Thousands of people out of millions of dollars. It's sad.
Hundreds
it crumbled,
of millions.
And it's sad. But let's talk about the real scam that's going on in America. It's a scam that involves millions of people and billions of dollars being pitched to our generation, my generation, as Social Security. It's a pension scammers, and those people need
bait
to be
and
in
switch.
Jail just
don't
as
talk
Enron
about,
does, because I'm not going to see that money, and you know it.
Bait and switch, bait and switch. You don't want to talk about the huge corporate corruption that's going on.
That
you want to talk about Social
potato
Security.
Compared to Social Security.
Well, let's talk about Social Security. Social Security existed back in the 30s to get us out of the Great Depression. Yes, it is a transfer of wealth from the young to the old. That's kind of my point. It's the difference between my America and yours, and I only got a minute left, so I'm just gonna wax on for my minute. It seems to me the difference between my version of America and yours is you have the selfish America. Your America is if you're strong, if you're rich, terrific. If you're not as strong as someone else, if you're old, if you're infirm, you die. It's over. It's
Bart,
Darwinian. That is the Republican version
Bart,
of America. My version is we can all help each other. I believe in capitalism. I believe in hard work. But I also believe that we're all born into this world as helpless babies. We die as infirm adults. Somewhere in between, we may need a little help along the way. And my version of America says we're all in this together,
Bart,
and we can help each other.
I spent 2 years as a missionary in southern Argentina.
Okay,
and
you've
I
got
paid,
10 seconds.
I paid for that opportunity to be there to be able to help the people, and I give 10% to charity every year.
That's terrific,
and
Tom.
And I'm a college student. So to say I believe in America that is vicious, that doesn't want to help, that'll leave people stranded, I think is completely, completely wrong.
Okay,
Republicans
Tom,
are compassionate. We want to help. We'll talk about Social Security later because that's the big potato.
Tom, our time is about up. I will invite you again on another Tuesday, I promise. I've enjoyed the debate. It's been very good. I would only hope that you would put some of your missionary work around to help Americans, not just people abroad. You know what? I believe you are doing that. I just don't think a lot of people in your party are, and that's my problem. Hey, you know, an hour sure flies when you're having a good debate. Tom, I will definitely invite you on again on another Election Tuesday. Thanks very much for coming on the Inside Scoop.
Have a good day, Mark. Talk to you later.
That's it, folks, for the Scoop. Tomorrow, we've got a great guest. You won't want to miss Sybil Edmonds. Now, you've probably read about her in the news. She came on my show, by the way, before she was famous. She, of course, is the FBI translator that found spies at the FBI. People actually trying to recruit her into foreign organizations that are on the watch list. She went, she told the FBI about it. What did they do? They fired her. She also talked about the incompetence of translations, trying to protect us from terrorism. They fired her. And now she's suing the FBI, and the results of her case have come back. You may have read about it. She's going to come on the air tomorrow. She's going to tell us about it. You won't want to miss the show, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Thursday is the best of all. My former boss, Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts, is coming here on the Inside Scoop with the question that I haven't heard anyone ask on any radio show before, but we're going to ask it. When is it appropriate to out a closeted gay politician? Expect a raucous show on Thursday. Keep listening in to the Inside Scoop. You can get it on www.radioinsidescoop.com or our new streamer at whiterosesociety.org. And I hope you listen in. And if you like the Scoop, do me a favor. Don't keep it a secret. This is Mark Levine signing off.
It's a good thing that Saddam was killed.